Named after the mechanism that separates the sweet wort from the spent grain, False Bottom Girls helps you filter through the wonderful yet sometimes confusing world of beer.
Hey, I'm Rachel Hudson, head brewer and co-owner of Pilot Brewing and an advanced cicerone.
Hi, I'm Jen Blair, master cicerone, home brewer, and sensory expert. False Bottom Girls is proudly sponsored by Jasper Yeast, yeasts that are out of this world. Learn more about Jasper Yeast at jasperyeast.com. Rachel, how goes it?
Oh, it goes good. Oh, I was just hoping something better would come out. What goes around comes around.
There goes the neighborhood.
Oh, yeah. That's what happens. That's my joke about me and Jeff moving in to this neighborhood, which is like, this neighborhood has a freaking magazine. Okay. I just want to that's the type of neighborhood we moved into. So my joke is we're just out here having pool parties, smoking weed, being dinks, moving in, taking over. My husband doesn't smoke weed, but sometimes I do. Just want to, it's not a wee. But yeah, I'm just like, look at us taking over and being a mess.
Right.
Not having kids.
So, welcome everyone to this episode of False Bottom Girls. That I can't think of another one. It's probably going to be way more Gosa puns.
There are so many Gosa puns. But it is just too early on Tuesday morning.
Fair enough.
Sorry.
Fair enough. I'm on my fourth cup of coffee. So
yeah,
I'm sure I'm on
my 12th Sudafed. So I'm feeling a little woo.
Yeah. Rachel's lady. I'm all hyped up. So I'll just keep interrupting you when I think of more good Gosa puns.
Good. Yeah.
So I bet you can't guess what we're talking about today.
Schwartz beer.
Yep. That's right.
No, we're talking about Gosa today because I don't know. I guess because we haven't, and it was on the list. And I recently did German beer class part 1, 2, and 3. So sometimes when I'm doing stuff at the brewery, I'm like, hey, let's do a podcast episode because my mind's all in one place.
Yep.
And it's easier to live life that way.
Exactly. And how many medals have you won for your Gosas?
Oh, I almost said 39. Because that's my total number. And I have that ready. I'm like, 39. I have won a gold for Blackberry Gosa, a GABF a couple years ago. I did silver for Mimosa Gosa, Gosa with Blood Orange Puree. 2019, the first time we entered. That beer has also won a medal in a near gluten-free category for a different competition. And Prickly Pear? I think Prickly Pear won once. So many medals, so hard to keep up with,
I know, right? But yeah, a good 10% of your medals have been from your Gosas.
Gosas do well. We like our Gosas. The public likes Gosas. The one thing I hate about my Gosa is that everyone really likes them, always really wants them, and I can only make half a batch at one time. We're not going to go dive too much into the whole brewing and everything, the science, the process of brewing today of Gosas.
We don't care. No, I'm kidding.
It's going to be a lot of history stuff, but yeah, I got to sour this beer, right? So the beer sits in my brew house for a day and a half souring. And then by the time I knock it out and put it into a fermenter, I can't just go and do that again. Not like I could if I was double brewing in one day. So it sucks because I get I can bump it up a little bit. I'll get 3.5 barrels versus 3. But then that's it. And then everyone wants it. And then it's gone. And then they bitch at me. And then I have to do it again. And I'm like, why can't you just have fruit or wheat beer when I can make a whole take of it? That's a brewer owner problem. No, we are doing, at Pilot Brewing, we like to do a lot of beer education. Over the winter, we did German beers, which there are a lot of. So Gozo was one little part of that,
How
but
many? How many? Name them all. No, I'm kidding.
I don't know off the top of my head. More than we talked about because, well, you know, as educators, as Jen and I, who are educators, we tend to follow BJCP a lot, right, with the guidelines because Cicerone, we're studying, blah, blah, blah. So when I am doing these education classes, I do explain to everyone what those guidelines are and why we're talking about these styles. But in fact, if you go over there to any country, there's always so many more styles than is actually mentioned in BJCP. So for class purposes, we stick to like BJCP styles, but I was learning and telling things about cola beers, very popular, land beer. You know, there's a lot of regional things that go on, style-wise in these areas, just like the styles that you know of are very regional in Germany. Like Germany is a really regional place when it comes to their brewing. You're going to find Kolsch in Cologne, Alt beer in Düsseldorf, Schwarz beer in that like Saxony, Thuringia area. Northern Germany has like Berliner and some Goza. So there's, it's very intentional. So it makes kind of learning about beer a little interesting because it's the only country to really do that. You know, like Belgium, in a way, kind of does that. Like you have your Roeselare area with the Flanders red and brown beers, Wallonial area with Saisons, you know, and the monasteries to have their like styles typically. You know, you have your like monasteries that are making like the triple and the double, but you also have like Orval, which is like a Belgian pale ale doing its kind of own thing. But you go to a Belgian brewer in Brussels, like maybe a, you know, a not like Chimay, like a smaller one, and they're just, this is their brown beer, this is their pale beer, this is their red beer, and that's kind of it. You know, there's not really, oh, this is my red beer with cherries and peppercorns, and like that's kind of their breakdown. So, you know, where I was going with that is just like they're so unique with how styles are kind of evolved. But, you know, as we have mentioned before, we as Americans like to group these, right? So just throwing that out there, if you're studying guidelines, just know that there's so much more out there than just what's listed in BJCP guidelines. But today we're going to dive in a little bit about Goza and kind of the history of Goza. I find it to be really interesting. You know, a lot of these old style beers like Berliner Weiss and Goza, these are a lot older than, say, you know, wheat beer, right? For an example, or like maybe a Belgian wit, or these are really, really old school styles, like medieval time recipes, stuff like that. However, I do like to go back and even just restate, not restate, but maybe point out that beer doesn't actually really start in Europe. It does start in the Africa regions, kind of Middle East area. So, like this, a lot of people think beer starts in Europe. And I just want to kind of go back and, you know, there is beer way before Europe. So, like, we're talking about a really, really fucking old style Goza, like 1000 AD, but this is not, that's not the beginning of beer. For Goslar, for the town of Goslar, very much so. So, Goza being in the east region of Germany, we have the town of Goslar, and Goza goes through these different time eras. So we're going to talk about a Goslar Goza, and then the time of the Lipsar Goza, and then we have like post-war Goza, and then modern interpretation of Goza. And if brewers from 1000 AD tasted the Goza today, they would it be very, very shocked of what it tastes like versus what they want it to be, because this is one of the styles that it tastes. This modern day Goza is very different than what the Goslar Goza was intended to be. So let's talk about that. So Goslar is a small town, northeast region of Germany. If you go there today, there's not going to be a ton of brewing. It's not a big center town anymore. Or probably never was that big, but it's definitely not the area of brewing anymore. But one of the cool things about this town is during, you know, the Middle Ages, around AD 500 to the 1500, you know, the ale brewed in Goslar was very much a product of the Goslar River. as most things are being brewed, you know, they use their water source, right? And within that water, this happened to have a very high salt content. There's a very salinated water content, and it did come across in their beer. However, the beer to start out with, you know, there's lots of white beers going on around this time. We do the Blennerweiss is being made around this time as well. We see the Brohan, and I do want to go back and recognize I did make, if you listen to our Berliner episode, I did make a mistake. I mentioned about a beer called Brohan being a brown based beer. That is wrong. The Brohan was a white based beer. So back in that time, the way you could dry your malt was either fire based or air based. You could let them all sit out in the sun and dry it to so you could get to the point where you need it to brew, or you could use fire, right? And this is where we got our brown beers, which were smoky. And then we had our white beers, which were kind of air dried. You didn't have that smoke quality to it. So these were kind of the two base beers being made. But on the white side, Berlinerweiss, Brohan was mainly from the city of Hamburg, Berliner, around the area of Berliner. And then we had Goza all kind of going on at the same time. So the Goslar Goza actually starts out as this like almost malt style beer, malt, like a sweet malt style beer, almost like a caramel malt type like beer with a wine like tartness. And I say that because everything has a wine like tartness at this point, like Kolsch, every style is to be consumed very soon, very early. Wine-like tartness can be nice and refreshing, but if it sits there and continue to increase, it will turn into like a vinegar type sourness, which is not so refreshing. So this is a young beer. We have a high salt content in our water, and we have this like maltier style beer, not a white style sour beer like we are having today. So the brewers of Goslar are making this almost like salted caramel beer, and this is what they're used to drinking. The beer's very fresh. Obviously, they're drinking it fresh. This is beer, is a sweet malt bomb with a light salted character that has a little bit of sourness going on. However, as they set up for export, because this is one of the ways that towns start to make money. They brew the beer, they sell it within the town, they supply their town, but now let's export it so we can not only make money for our town, but create a name for our town. So this beer is being sent to other cities, but Dolnitzer, you know, other cities around there. But by the time it gets there, it is a lot more sour than what the Goslar brewers are intending it for to be. However, as it's traveling and it's increasing in sourness, it's increasing in saltiness a little bit, and the new people in or the people in the new town are getting this beer, they do really like it. They're like, this is sour, but it's delicious. So they start to recreate this Goza based upon what they're drinking, right? Now, the town of Goslar kind of hates this. This is not what the beer is intended to be. The brewers, this is not what they want their name attached to, right? They don't like the fact that they're getting this sour beer. So in 1827, I believe, there's actually a commission that starts in the Ghost with the Goslar Brewers, where they come together as brewers and they actually outlaw home brewing. So everybody in the town of Goslar is forced to drink their beer, so it doesn't sour as quickly. So they're drinking the beer that they intended, right? This sweet bomb or sweet malted, slightly salted caramel type beer. So they even take it so far as to almost stop brewing Goza. They say, what if we stop brewing Goza? We brew this dark brown, slightly salted beer and kind of make that our new town beer. That didn't go through. They didn't do that. But some brewers did start halting their production during the summer months. That they call it the spoiling months, you know, because it was hot and the beer would go sour faster. But and then at the same time, we have like the city of Dolnitzer down the road, who is like, this beer is delicious. We very much want to make this beer here. So what do? You start to recreate the beer. They don't have the same water source as the town of Goslar does. So they do what all the other brewers do, you try to recreate that water profile, right? So they end up with a beer that's more salted and more sour than the Goslar style Goslar, but this works for the town of Dahlnitzer. Dahlnitzer is still brewing this Goza today. There is a Dahlnitzer brewery still open, you know, a more sour, more salted version of what this Goslar Goza was intended to be over, you know, this is over the course of like 700 years that I'm talking about. You know, it didn't happen overnight, obviously. So we have this modern day interpretation around 1830s of what Goza is. It's very different from the original interpretation of what the Goslar breweries wanted it to be. In Goslar, the town of Goslar, the brewing there does fade out over a while. And over the next 100 years or so, Leipzig becomes the city for brewing Goza. This is where Goza, the style spreads, and this is where Goza really takes off. Leipzig even becomes known as Goza City. And at the time, there's not a lot of people living there, but there's over 80 taverns producing Goza. So Goza is ingrained in this culture. So much so that, you know, I did skip a little bit ahead around the Rijnhoksebot purity law that happens around 1500s. But that culture was so ingrained in Goza that the Rijnhoksebot made a adaptation, made an exception for the Goza style that it could use its water. So that is why Goza is allowed under Rijnhoksebot. If you ever ask, oh, well, coriander and salt, that doesn't go. Like, you're correct, but because of this. So we have dedicated Goza taverns in the city of Leipzig, which are really important for the Goza production. They are making the beer there, and for fermentation, they're allowing this beer to undergo secondary fermentation in a bottle. Maybe for our episode, I'll post a picture of this bottle.
They're so cool.
They're like a big fishbowl, almost kind of looking
yeah,
the way the bottom is.
Kind of shaped like a hookah, sort of.
Kinda like imagine like a like an old school fishbowl that would just sit on your desktop, like, you know, where fish die because like it's an awful place to keep fish, but it's just like a round fishbowl, and then but it's not as round. It's like take the shape, don't make it round, make it skinny kind of, and then give it a long neck. That works really well in my mind. That's why I don't know about y'all, but however, you know, they brew the beer, let it ferment in these bottles, and the long neck. The lactobacillus and the fermentation would create a pellicle within that long neck, so much so that CO2 could actually not escape from that pellicle. It would really be really, really thick, and it would allow carbonation to form in that bottle and finish the fermentation of the beer, allowing it go through a second fermentation of a beer. It slowly ferments in this bottle, creates that thick pellicle in the long neck, not allowing CO2 to escape, naturally carbonated. So within 24 hours, it's very drinkable and it's very young. We get like fruity, pear-like sour. And then a too old of one will start to taste like vinegar. So, and these taverns at the time, they were called Gozashenkas. It's just fun to say. But apparently a good sign of a Gozashenka or of a good Gozashenka, a good tavern, is you could get your Goza cut with lemonade. Part of me is like, oh, maybe this is kind of the beginning of Shandy. You know, it was very common. You got sour beer, right? And you don't have, as day goes by, some of these beers are just getting more sour than others. It's very common to make blends of these beers and cut them with something like lemonade to help cut anything that's getting too sour or too vinegarized. And then, you know, side story, when I was putting together this class, one of the things we talked about was also shandies and rattlers and kind of where those came from. I found a couple stories that fit very nicely from like early 1900s of like where some of these could come from. One being like, you know, there was a big bicycle race going on in some town, and the tavern owner, everyone was coming in for beer, and he was so scared that he was going to be running out that he started to cut it with, I can't remember if it was lemonade or juice, like the shandy or whatever. But, and I was like, I don't know, that just seems too recent. It was like 1920 or 30 or something. It just seemed like it was too recent. I was like, maybe that's right. But I feel like this is more accurate. We're talking a long time ago, historical mixing goes with lemonade. I just have a hard time believing that it took until like the 19, like I keep going up in the years. It might have even been 40s before someone's like, let's cut it with lemonade. Ha! My new thing. That's my side story. But we go into wartime. We have war, World War I really takes out a lot of Gose breweries. It takes out people's will to, live almost. We're dealing with wartime. Affording food is expensive during this time, let alone beer. So when World War II comes, we have the Nazis taking over that area, and they determine what beer is going to be brewed. It's actually one of the reasons why Berliner Weiss survived, but Gose not so much. So Gose becomes extinct. This is like a second really extinction on the on by this time, because there was a little bit of a die between the Gose, Goslar, and the Leipzig. But so Gose does have little periods of extinction. So around World War II, it's completely not being produced anymore anywhere, like nowhere. But in 1949, there's a brewery in Leipzig that a tavern owner who's repurposing a Gose brewery. And he is like, I cannot not have Gose if I'm going to be opening a Gose brewery. He's not a brewer, but he spends a lot of time going around to brewers, collecting information and just taking it, talking to people. He does. This guy is like, I'm
No,
going.
I know, but like sorry, it's funny just because I'm thinking like, oh, that sounds familiar. A guy who doesn't know anything about brewing opens a brewery, but before he does that, he goes around and pesters a bunch of bartenders and brewers to be like, oh, you're gonna ferment at that temperature. Okay. Okay.
It convinces him to make this Goslar style Goza
Right.
to start serving in these pubs. And it worked. It worked. And in 1966, again, almost 20 years later, it kind of dies out again. So, however, not once, but twice, this happens twice. It happens in the 1940s and the 1960s. Some white guy, well, I assume he's white, opens up a brewery and is like, let's brew Goza, brewers, please do it for me. So it gets a little bit of revival, goes out extinct, happens again. And then we have the, 1980s. You don't really see Gozas that much. And then you kind of have the American craft brewery bringing back these old styles. And now, like these days, you see Gozas out there that are very much a body for fruit. Like it's very hard to almost find a Goza that is not fruited or change altered in some way, because it goes, this is supposed to be like a 50% unmalted wheat beer, like light white in style, a little tart, refreshing, not tasting like a bunch of fruit profiles. However, that's okay too. Fruit's okay too. This is a style that today's interpretation is so different than what the modern day Goslar brewers intended it to be. And it's just kind of cool to see why that happens. It's like this beer, only because it's so young and just cannot survive that long, makes it to this other town as a different beer. Totally unintended with these brewers to be. I can't even imagine how frustrating that must have been to have this style that's just like out there with your name on it that has nothing to do with what you want it. So today you see a lot of ghosts out there. I at the brewery I make I did actually enter in a Goza, just base Goza, no fruit one time, and it did not go well. However, I'll tell you that the beer came from a big batch of Goza that was going to get fruit. So we have our big tanks, and then we have like really small tanks for our tow pilot system. And so I took that, I cleaned, sanded it, purged it with CO2, pulled in the finished fermenting beer to that so I could just fruit the rest and enter in both. However, sometimes when you do extra things through beer, put them through extra steps, there's going to be extra oxygen picks up. There's always risk for problems, and something obviously didn't go to 100% because the beer just got oxidized flaws and did not go well. Whereas the base beer won gold. With blackberries, Face beer with the blackberries. I do remember one time, or during that year when we won for Blackberry Goza, I was judging at GABF, and I go to sit down at, last table of the day or whatever. And another lady sits down, and she's like, "Oh, we just did Fruta Gozas." And I knew she was about to start spewing her stories about it. And I was like, "Stop. Say no more. Say no more. Please do not. Because I don't want to know
Right.
one way or another. I don't want any inclination." And then
Yes.
we won gold. And I was like, "Woo." But yeah, it was the exact same beer. Like that base beer that I pulled off was for that exact same batch. So the base beer on the big batch was fine. It's just obviously something that was done in after that we fucked up
Right.
on. Ooh, I know that was very fast explanation, a little brief history of Goza. Today, to find a Goza without fruit, there's not a ton of examples. I mean, Westbrook Goza.
Yeah, my issue with Westbrook Gosa
Yeah, we're
is
gonna tell you right now, Westbrook. I did taste one a couple weeks ago for the class,
yeah.
and it was exactly this. Yeah.
Chlorophenols.
Butterfritos. Westbrook,
Yeah.
you have chlorophenol in your goza. You
Yes.
should know. This is
Yes.
us telling you. You might
Maybe.
not know. Maybe you're
Yeah,
adapted to it.
that's true. Maybe so. Because I haven't picked up chlorophenols in other Westbrook beers, but it's been a while since I've had a Westbrook beer.
Yeah, I can't speak
But
to that. But you and I are not the only ones to determine this. I even
yes.
had someone in my last class for pointing out that something was weird. And I
Yeah.
was like, very good.
Yeah, very good. I spent money on
And
this.
then I told everybody, and they were all like kind of disappointed. And I was like, well, that's part of the beer world.
Yep. That's true, which sucks because the, and I don't, it's not an every time thing, and maybe it's a newer thing because I know I had Westbrook Gosa as a blind style on like one of the times I took the master exam because I tasted it and was like, I know this isn't just Gosa, this is Westbrook Gosa because it's, the, like you were saying, American versions
It's not
tend
a
to
ton to,
be, yeah, kind of they're bastardized, right?
yeah, and there's not a
But
ton to choose from.
right, and I mean Westbrook has quite a bit of lactic acid, and so
Yeah.
it does fit within the style, but I would say Westbrook Gosa is kind of at the higher end of what would be allowable for acidity. There's no allowance for chlorophenols, so
Yes.
stop
Definitely
brewing
not.
with city water, I guess. But
Yeah, I don't know.
it
That's
is, if it's not chlorophenolic, it is a very, I think, a very pretty good example of the style.
yes.
But yeah, you're
I
right.
would
You just can't find it.
No, you can't. I don't even know off the top of my head. Like, oh man, we were at Durham last week for a beer festival. We found this German brunch restaurant. It was freaking amazing. But they
Yeah.
had, I'm gonna mess up the pronunciation of this, but Bayernhof
Oh,
Goza,
yes.
they had that on draft.
Whoa.
Yeah. I mean, they had
That's
other
pretty
really cool things
sweet.
on draft, like German beer, but
Yeah.
I
No,
was
that,
like,
seeing that on
oh.
draft, I would like stop in my tracks and be like, that's
I
what I
really
want.
regret. It was just so early in the morning. I regret. I wanted to get it. I should have, but I'm going back, and I'm going back because that I'm going for that restaurant. It
Yeah.
was amazing. But yeah, they had that on draft, but it incredibly rare to see stuff like that, especially on draft. Oh my God. Just straight
Yeah.
up Goza too. Just like no
That's awesome.
BS. Yeah.
Man,
Really
that is
regretting
super cool.
not getting it. Yeah, hard to find. I don't even know where to send you to find some Goza.
Yeah, I think, well, I say this without verifying it. It seems like maybe Live Oak would probably make a Gosa since they make like a Lichtenhainer, but maybe
Okay.
they don't. I don't know.
I don't
But
know.
they're a German style brewery that brews a lot of kind of more esoteric styles. Like they have a Lichtenhainer. They've got a Grodzicki. They've got a bunch, like a few of those kind of more niche German styles that they brew. So maybe they have it. I say that sitting in front of a computer, like I can't just look it up. I have three screens in front of me. But yeah, Gosa is, and it's, it's the same with Berliner Weiss. You just really can't find
Yeah, it's hard.
basic ones, because like you said, particularly in the United States, people use them as fruit delivery
Yeah.
mechanisms.
I mean, we do too. That's what the public wants to drink, you know? And you gotta sell the beer. It's part of it. So yeah, I totally understand that. I would love to be able to try modern day interpretation of a Goslar Goza. Just to, like, sounds good. Caramel, salted caramel beer. Yeah, I'll take that.
And I know we've talked about, like, we talked about the Gosa book by Fal Allen in our pH and titratable acidity episode, just because that he gave the absolute best explanation for non-scientific people for pH and titratable acidity. But that book, his Gosa book, is really good. Like, it's well written, it's well researched. And I also, allowing for the fact that that book has been written in the last few years, it's not from 1994.
Yeah, exactly. I was going to say
So
it's
it's
more
also
recent.
updated, but it's, yeah, that's just a really good book. Like, between the two of us, I know we have all of the beer books, and some of them just aren't that entertaining or like
Yeah.
just that good. You get super bored, they're super dry or really technical. And the Gosa book is, to me, like the Brew Like a Monk book, where it's just, and like the Farmhouse Ales book, I think those books are just entertaining to read. And the Gosa book is just really good. If nothing else, get it for the chapter on pH and titratable
Yeah, yeah,
acidity,
yeah.
because he
Seriously.
described it better than anything I've read before. But in my first year, I think, of judging a GABF, I got to judge with Fal. And he was at my
Cool.
table, and it was wild because it was like me, Fal Allen, is it Sean O'Connor, the guy from 21st Amendment, and I like two other people that it was just like, whoa, like this is one of those cool moments where I'm like, yeah, I'm at this table, yeah, I'm here with you guys because I
Yeah,
deserve to be. And like Fal was very nice, but I remember being like, God, I know this guy. I know his name. How do I know him? He works or worked for Anderson Valley, and he is the one who really pioneered, like, oh, that's a good one. Anderson Valley has the Kimmy, the Yink, and the Holy Gosa. That I believe that one is a plain Gosa. And then they also have like their blood orange and stuff like that. But Fal Allen works or worked at Anderson Valley. And it's just a thing where I'm sitting there, I'm like looking at his name tag. I'm like, God, I know who this is, but I don't want to ask, because I don't want them to be like, you don't know who I am. But so like later I like pull out my phone and I'm like, doo, 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 in Google, and like it comes up like, oh yeah, he's the author of the Gosa book. He also wrote the barley wine book. But it was cool because it was one of those things where I was like, I was just at a table with this guy. And I
Yeah.
didn't agree with him about honey beer.
I've had moments like that, and I didn't even know who the person was till afterwards, and you're like,
Yeah,
oh,
you find out
shit.
later. Yeah. It's
What?
like the time I was just sitting there talking to Keith Via, and I was like, this guy is so nice and like just so fun to talk to. And then he walked off and somebody was like, bye, Keith. And then I remember seeing like Via on his thing, and I was like, oh shit, I was just sitting here talking to this
Yeah,
guy.
if you want to know some people that are very nice and very approachable, you should not feel weird around. Highly recommend John Palmer, Randy Mosher, even
Pete Schlossberg
Pete.
From Pete's Wicked Ale.
Yeah,
I
he's
like
very
him
nice. He's very
because
nice.
he I've been judging before and like sitting at a table by myself at lunch, and he has come over and like just come over to sit down with me and
No,
talk
he's
with me.
very nice. Yeah.
Yeah,
I
very, very
feel
nice guy.
a little bad because I was judging with him at FoBad, but I didn't realize. I mean, not that it would have mattered if I knew who he was, but this Pete tried to just say all these beers are oxidized. We're not sending any through. And I was like, no, sir. That is not what's happening here. Mind you, this is a barrel age competition. Like, even if you get like the barrel that is doing other things, it doesn't mean it's necessarily oxidized to the point where you can't judge it.
Judges, and I should, and I maybe I'm just saying this because it's mostly men who are judging, but so many like brewer dudes, when you judge with them, is the same thing. Everything is oxidized. Well, I get some oxidation in this. And I'm always
Then
like,
you
what
shouldn't be touching beer
oxidation?
anymore.
Yeah. What,
If
tell
you
me what oxidation flavors specifically you are getting. And like, sometimes it's like, well, yeah, this is an old beer, you can tell. But other times I'm like, I'm going to need you to give me more details than that because I don't pick up any kind of oxidation. And that doesn't mean that there isn't oxidation
Yeah,
there, but
absolutely.
it's one of the, it's like in the same vein as the people who are like, I'm really sensitive to diacetyl. No, you're not. The people who say that are never sensitive to diacetyl.
And don't get me wrong, he was nice and we worked through it. We did send beers through. We did the job that we were sent there to
Hallmark
do.
of good judges. You can disagree, but still come to a resolution.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. A little weird, but nice guy. Totally recommend walking up to him if you're feeling these guys. That's one thing I've learned. There's no nothing, it, there's no intimidating people out there. Everyone's just there to have fun and do the same job as you,
Right.
and they're happy to meet you and talk to you for sure. But yeah,
Yes. Well, yeah. Thank you, Rachel,
little side
for.
story, I guess,
Yeah.
off our topic. But we wouldn't be us if we didn't do that.
Yeah, right? Exactly. Sean O'Sullivan, that's his name. The guy from 21st. I was like, I know it's extremely Irish. I can't remember what his name is. But yeah, I always like hearing and learning about the past of some of these styles because, you know, I grew up in the United States and I specifically grew up as a beer drinker in kind of the gold rush, you know, halcyon days of American craft beer. So I was getting introduced to Gosa and Berliner Weiss as mostly as vehicles for fruit. And yeah, and you know, I don't know if I've ever had just a Berliner Weiss either. I know you all made one, but I don't think I got to taste that one. So yeah, you know, it's kind of got me thinking like maybe I want to just homebrew a plain Gosa, just have that on tap.
Yeah,
It's
do it.
refreshing.
It's
It's low
refreshing.
alcohol. So yeah, well, thank you, Rachel, for
Thank you,
telling us
Jen.
about Gosa. I think that makes a nice bookend with our Berliner Weiss. Like I said, I still sometimes get the two of them confused. I'm like, wait, which one's got salt? Or like, which coriander is usually the thing that I'm like,
She's just kidding, everybody. She doesn't do that. She's the master cicerone.
coriander. No, listen, you get to be a master cicerone, and one of the big benefits of that is you just kick all of that knowledge the fuck out of your head, and suddenly you've got all this brain space that you don't know what to do with. All right, so you can find us online at falsebottomgirls.com. You can email us at falsebottomgirls. Oh, wait, sorry. You can email us falsebottomgirls@gmail.com. You can find us on social media at falsebottomgirls. So again, thank you, Rachel. Thank you, everyone, for listening. We appreciate it. And like we've said before, if you have an idea for a topic or something you would like for us to cover, let us know. You know, we want to make sure that we're providing you with the information that you would like to know about.
Yeah, absolutely. Because right now we're still picking.
Yeah.
Just let you know.
We're just out there doing our best.
This has been False Bottom Girls.
And we make the brewing world go round.
False Bottom Girls is proudly sponsored by Jasper Yeast, yeast that are out of this world. Learn more about Jasper Yeast at jasperyeast.com.